Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Psychology Sisters podcast. Before jumping into today's episode, we would like to respectfully acknowledge the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Awabakal, Worimi, and Darul peoples on which the Psychology Sisters podcast is recorded today. We acknowledge both their history and their living present, as well as future generations. We invite you to take a moment to pay your respects to the traditional owners of the land in which you are joining us on today.
This episode is sponsored by our brand new 6-week anxiety e-course, a self-paced course dedicated to deepening your understanding of the hows and why of your anxiety, as well as teaching you the strategies that really work. If you'd like to feel more calm, confident, and empowered with your anxiety, head to the links in the show notes for more information. Welcome back to another episode from the Psychology Sisters. We are two passionate professionals on a mission to deepen your understanding around mental health and start the conversations to break down stigma. Hosted by Kat, a registered psychologist.
And Amy, a registered psychotherapist. From building our own online private practice, the Psych Collaborative, to creating an e-course to help you care for your anxiety, we are so dedicated to bringing good quality, evidence-based information to you in easily digestible and accessible ways. Together, we dive deep into the wonderfully complex world of psychology. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode. Today, we have something a little bit different in store for you. We had a really interesting question from one of the lovely listeners who has slid into our DM that we thought we'd answer on a day in the life of a therapist. But before we go into answering that question, beautiful, darling Katniss, how art thou? How have you been? What has your week been like? What is the 411? Give it to me.
Give it to me. Love that, Ames. What a beautiful intro. Not much has been going on, my love. Just trying not to freeze. It is taking a cold shift down here in Wollongong. I left the house this morning and I came back and my fingers were literally turning blue, and that's not an exaggeration. And I said to myself, and I say this every May, June, July, why do I live here? Why am I doing this to myself? Why am I not in an island in Hawaii? Why am I not anywhere else but here?
Because I would miss you too much.
You would come with me. I'd uproot all my friends and family so they could all live together. We would be scuba dive instructors and we would drink coconuts and eat pokey. And honestly, I'm not far off it. I would love to do that.
That sounds like a dream.
Apart from just having a little location seasonal crises, no, my week has been fantastic. Nothing too exciting to report. What about you, Ames? How's your week? Give us the rundown. Please also share with us your pit and peak of the week.
Before I go into pit and peak, my week has been very similar to yours in that I have been acclimatizing to much cooler mornings. I definitely feel you with the frostbite and the blue lips and fingies that... You know that feeling, and I often describe it as when it gets cold to your bone.
Yes.
Like it's that sense of like my bones are cold.
My bones are freezing.
Freezing bones. Yes, absolutely. That has been a bit of a rude shock that happens yearly, which we just never seem to get over, do we? Do we, Katniss? No. Every year. So more complaints from us. So rude.
So selfish, this weather.
So rude. So selfish. So completely feel you there, literally feel you there in terms of the cold. And my pit and peak, well, my peak involves you, as it often does, in that I am so excited that you are coming over to my place this weekend. I feel like a little kid, you know, at school when it's like, it's Thursday.
Sleepover.
One more day to the weekend and my friend gets to sleep over.
How lit was that at school when it would be Friday morning and you'd lock eyes with your best friend and you knew you were going home to their house, to their sick house with their big TV and all their snacks and their really relaxed parenting, and you were having the best night of your life at that sleepover. How lit lit was that Friday morning?
Oh, it was the best walking into school that morning with swagger, knowing that you and your bestie.
And it was like an inside joke.
A snack attack on the couch.
You'd like nod at each other and be like, it's going down tonight. Yeah. We are sleepovering hard tonight, my friend.
And all the planning, like, oh, tonight we're going to do this and tonight we're going to do this and let's make brownies.
Yeah, let's make brownies and let's prank call our crushes and let's go on MSN. Oh, nostalgia. But look, I'm so excited to do all of that plus more with you. I don't know about the prank calling or the MSN, but you know what? Snack attack. I'm so, so ready. Get your hot chocky ready. Get your mugs ready. We are sleepovering, baby.
I am so, so beyond excited. I have had like little like jittery, like excited butterflies in my tummy. In so preparation sweet. For this weekend, I actually feel like a little child that is just, you know, it's almost Friday. My best friend is sleeping over. So that has been a peak that you are coming over this week or tomorrow night, Friday night sleepover. And yes, we have some business stuff that we need to get to. It will be a bit of a mixed bag of work weekend and bestie time. But now it has been so many years where I think we have really learnt how to juggle that really well. Like, I think we just naturally find this really great balance around getting work stuff out of the way in the morning and making sure that all of those boxes are ticked. And then it usually gets to a point where we start to get silly and it's like, okay, time to have a little bit of fun and hang out together. So I'm really looking forward to that. Just spending time with you, doing the really lovely things that we love doing together, like going for beautiful walks along the beach, grabbing a coffee, and just having some girly time, like being in our pajamas, you know, maybe watching a rom-com and just catching up. I'm so, so excited for that. It feels like it's been a little while since we've had an old school sleepover. So that is my peak of the week. Well, I guess it hasn't happened yet, but the excitement.
Future peaking.
The excitement that I experience. Future peaking. Future peaking. I feel the excitement now. It's just made my week really light and lovely, having something to look forward to, I think. And then my pit of the week, not to be boring and talk about the weather. I won't do that again. And I'm also going to put myself on a little bit of a suspension in talking about my dogs. So what I'm left with isn't a lot.
Really slim pickings.
Really slim pickings. So I don't actually have that much to bring to the table. I apologize. I'm letting the team down. All I will say, and it's probably not a pit so much, it is just an annoyance that has occurred a couple of times. I, for the life of me, cannot remember my bin day. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do.
I feel that.
Okay. And then sometimes I don't. Mm. And like I mentioned, I am grasping at straws here, people. But I would say my pit of the week would be that I did a lot of yard work around the house and filled up my green bin. And it was really important that that green bin would be emptied so then I could mow my lawn this week. So I naturally forgot about bin day yet again, and my green bin is full, and now I'm struggling to know where I'm going to put all of the residual grass clippings. Now I'm in this dilemma of, do I mow my lawn or do I leave my lawn? And then I have this like overgrown lawn because I didn't empty my bin. Also my recycling bin, which is very, very full, because green bin and recycling bin day happens at the same time. So neither of them were emptied. And now I have this backlog of recycling and grass clippings and I don't know what to do with them. So that is my pit.
Oh, it's such a minor inconvenience. It's one of those things where it has a really sneaky domino effect into the rest of your world where it's like, oh, I'll just put some stuff in the bin. Oh, wait, I can't. Okay, then the bin overflows at home and then I get cockroaches and then I just feel disgusting. So it's like, it's a sneaky domino effect, I think, of not knowing your bin night or forgetting bin night.
Yeah, and then just feeling like a bit of a pleb that I forgot bin day again. You know, just that little like, ugh, at yourself. Really, Amy, again. But yes, I'm going to move right along and not waste any more time talking about my bin situation. Dear Katniss, how are you? How is your pit and peak?
It is good. Look, I really validate your bin situation. It's not small. It's not minor. It is so annoying if you forget it, especially when you move somewhere new and it's a totally different day to what you're used to. And there's nothing worse than lying in bed at 5 a.m. all snuggy and warm.
You hear that bin truck.
And you hear that bin truck and you're like, oh. And then you have to like find some shoes to put on and you're in this awkward like Crocs sock situation. You've got to stumble out in your pajamas and race out. And by the time you do that, the bin's gone. You're really questioning yourself as a human, as a functioning.
And so has your dignity.
As a functioning human of society. Yeah, you really,
dignity really left, right with that, yeah. With that rubbish truck.
Yeah, yeah. Goodbye. Goodbye. So
wave to it down the street.
Yeah, goodbye. Goodbye. Until next week. So I really, really hear you on that one. Very frustrating.
Thank you. Thank you for the validation. Needed it.
Pit and peak, I would say, similar to that pit, although more on a broader spectrum, I'm just feeling so behind in life stuff, you know, like life admin, like appointments, car servicing, just things that you need to do that really, what's the word, that really kind of...
The to-do list.
Yeah, the to-do list. And I do this twice a year. It happens this time every single year and at the end of the year. And I just like, oh my God, I've got to do all these things. And I totally forgot to pay that bill. And I've got to go and do that. And I've got that doctor's appointment. And I've got to book in that. And yeah, so I'm just feeling so overwhelmed with life stuff at the moment. And I think also a lot of these things cost money. And given Cozzy Lives, the huge cost of living at the moment, I'm avoiding it as much as I can. I went to Coles the other day and I, don't judge me, I turned around the hair dye box and I thought, do I do this? Do I go back to self-dye? Because I don't know if I can really
judge it at all, sister.
So, yeah, that's just been my last 2 weeks, just feeling a little bit frantic and frazzled and a little bit all over the shop. But my peak is, yes, two actually. I am future peaking as well. I'm so pumped for this sleepover. I cannot wait. I share in your excitement tenfold. And also, my other peak is 2 weeks ago, so not last weekend, the weekend before, I completed my first half marathon and I am so, so stoked that I was able to give it a crack and get it done. I really was very last minute. I only decided 3 days before that I would do it. I wish I was being a little bit more organized with it, but I was able to go and it was freezing at the start line. I was so cold, but it was a really beautiful track. It was really flat, which was really great. And yeah, it was just such a great community. It was such a beautiful vibe. I think when you've been running on your own for so long, you don't think about those people around you, just kind of trying, you know, getting your run done. You might often like look and wave and smile at people, but you just also trying not to die. But I think with an event, it is such an amazing atmosphere, right? Like it's an incredible atmosphere. There's so many people like giving you pats on the back and just beautiful. Like it was just such a beautiful community and so encouraging and motivating. So I had a really good time. I was really proud of myself for finishing, but also I was just really loving the group community. It's made me want to do a few more community fun runs and things like that. So that would be my peak. And I did also, though, it's a little bit of a pit, but I lost 3 toenails since the half marathon. Like they have fallen off.
Holy moly.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
3.
So gross. 3. I think that my shoes were a little too small and I remember them hurting during the run. And I looked down in the shower a couple nights ago and I was like, wow, they've really just fallen off there. So have lost a few good men out there in my run, but I'm... It's so worth it. Just hope that they grow back really soon. So that would be my pit and peak of the week.
Amazing. And absolutely, you should be so, so proud running a half marathon. I think that is absolutely phenomenal and couldn't agree more that I think there is just such a beautiful, warm community spirit with events like that that make it just feel so invigorating and like you're part of something. I know that sounds obvious, okay, like obviously you're part of something, but it's that real sense of, oh, like we have this amazing shared experience in completing something, obviously as an individual, but like with other people, which I think is just really, really wholesome, really warming and lovely, and awesome that you were able to achieve that. I think it is no mean feat. Going back to your pit around feeling very overwhelmed with the to-do list, the demands that tend to stack up around this time of year, I think that is such a relatable feeling. You know, this kind of like mid-year when your insurances are due or your registration is due. I know for us, like, there are our governing body registrations due soon too. So it's like, is my professional development up to date? And all of those kind of things that then add to this compounding layer of stress, and it feels like, oh my gosh, you know, everything's stacking on top of me, and that does get really, really stressful. And I feel you with, should I go to Packet Dye? I wonder if I can colour my eyebrows in with Sharpie pens and anyone would notice.
Can I change my own tyres? Can I service my own car? We've all had those thoughts.
I'm getting flashbacks of The Simpsons when Homer tries to build that barbecue. It's like, why doesn't mine look like that?
That's why, kids, we don't service our own car unless we're really highly experienced. Yes, it is a stressful.
Or draw on our own eyebrows.
Yeah, I would really highly recommend to not do that.
Do not recommend.
Well, leading into today's topic, speaking of chaos, we are doing a really awesome question, as Ames mentioned at the top. Just a bit of a day in the life, expectation via reality. I guess the reality of the role of being a psychologist and a psychotherapist and just a therapist. Obviously, when we speak about this, we reside and work in Australia. So we'll be talking about it in the context of living and working in Australia. But I also wonder if a few of the things that we chat about will be really, really universal across therapists. So, Ames.
We had a wonderful question slide into our DMs. I will keep the person anonymous, but I love it. And I love the curiosity around these types of questions. So I guess I also want to say that Kat and I see your questions. We may not always get the opportunity to reply to each and every single one of them, but we do see your questions and we appreciate you all taking the time to write to us and to be curious about various psychological topics or even just about our own experiences as clinicians. So we are so, so appreciative of anyone that writes in. I guess we just want to acknowledge too that although we don't get to get back to everyone, we do see you and we do appreciate you. So this lovely listener has written in, "Hey guys, absolutely adore your podcast. It is my go-to for long decompressing walks." We love that. I love a potty for a long walk too. "I was wondering if you could do an episode on what it's like to be a psychologist, your expectations of the job versus what it's really like, aspects you enjoy about it versus some that maybe aren't so favorable. Just a general overview of the role would be really awesome to hear, and I'm sure a lot of your audience would be interested in hearing what it's like too." And we couldn't agree more. We read that and we're like, oh, that's a little bit different and a little bit fun for us to dive into today. So I guess maybe we will start with the first half of that question, and maybe I'll throw it over to you to begin with, Kat. When you were first embarking on becoming a psychologist, what were your expectations of the job?
Great question. A really, really great question. I think because in our university degree and the studies to get to become a psychologist, there isn't a lot of experience or work experience or the practical experience and that exposure to the profession, unless you'd kind of reached outside and got your own casual role working in maybe an admin position or working within somewhere in the private practice field or within whatever field you wanted to go into. So to be honest, before my fifth year, I think I hadn't had any exposure to what the world of psych would be like. I'd heard about it from colleagues and friends, but apart from that, my own personal experience, I did not have any at all. So I think that my expectations were very much driven by what I had heard and what I kind of thought being a psychologist would be. So I think my expectations were perhaps more based around what would my life look like? You know, I think when you're in that, and I wonder if you can relate to this, Ames, that working hard to get to that third year, to get to the fourth year, to get into masters or all of those things, you're very much future focused on those things, on the next level. It's like snakes and ladders. Psych, it's like need to get to that next level and then I can think about the next level. because it is quite competitive, that's where a lot of what I felt my focus was anyway. I never really thought so much about what life would be like beyond all of those things. I was just trying to survive the year or the masters or the whatever just to get through. So it wasn't really until I was kind of finishing up studies that I thought, oh my gosh, what would that actually be like? What would that feel like? What would a day in the life even look like? Where do I want to go? What do I want to work with? So I think expectations I had, I think I'd always had wanted to maybe gravitate more towards private practice. I remember thinking I would love to work with young women. I had a really big interest in health, integrating that holistically into mental health. So I think the expectations of the role very much like, how can I get there? You know, what would my expectations be? And perhaps I thought that I didn't exactly know the specifics, but, you know, wanting to really work individually with women, I really wanted to make a difference. I think a lot of people who do go into this role maybe feel the same. I really want to be able to help and support. So, yeah, I think I had just a very blurry expectation. I don't think it was as clear as maybe what other people might have. I knew the end goal, but I think I was so focused on getting through the steps, through the levels, that I hadn't really thought about it. But I guess when I got to maybe the end of my studies, I had a bit more clarity and understanding around what the role might actually look like. You and I would always speak about opening a clinic for ourselves and working really holistically. And it's so cool that we've done that now, reflecting on all this stuff. But yeah, like it was always this want to open a clinic or work privately with clients. And yeah, that was my expectation of the role. What about you, Ames? What was your expectation of becoming a therapist or psychotherapist?
I guess before we go into what my expectations were, did you feel like your expectations of the role were different to what reality has been like for you as a clinician?
Yes and no. I think the client-centric part of becoming a psychologist has been very much what I thought it would be. I think that idea of supporting clients one-to-one, of helping them, of providing space has been very much what I expected it would be. What I think I did not expect was everything that comes along with working in psych and for me, private practice. So obviously we have our own business, which is very different to being a psychologist in a private practice. But even just that alone, it's the administration side. I think I hadn't really known the gravity of that. That does take a lot of time. I think the responsibility of risk, it's such a privilege and it's such an important and pivotal part of our role. And so it should be. But I don't think I had realized how much of the onus of a client's risk does fall on practitioners. And I think for me, that was quite daunting when I was starting out to really feel the heaviness of that responsibility and not wanting to do the wrong thing. I would say those two things were definitely things that I'd not even thought about that were part of the role that probably weren't in my initial expectations.
Absolutely. That makes sense. And I can relate to a lot of what you're saying.
Tell me from your perspective, expectations versus reality.
I share a lot of the expectations, especially when you were describing that sense of, okay, uni is very competitive, studying is very competitive, and it's very consuming. So it is looking at what is the next hurdle that I have to overcome and achieve in order to get to the next step of where I need to go along this process. I also think in terms of my expectations of the role as a psychologist or as a psychotherapist, I think when I first started out wanting to become a therapist, my expectation was that it was very clinical. I remember wanting to be a clinical psychologist, and I remember having an interest in post-traumatic stress disorder and having an interest in health, very similar to you, Kat, but I had this expectation that my role would be a very clinical one. And I think a huge thing that I guess was different in terms of what I would have initially expected or what I would have assumed I would be like as a therapist, just speaking from my own experience, I actually haven't adopted an overly clinical role as a psychotherapist. I think a huge part of our role is that we have a very holistic human approach. And I think what maybe even surprised myself was that I really related more to the relational client-centered connection aspect of psychology than I did the clinical skills and assessment, which is what I had expected a lot of my role as a therapist to be like. I thought it would be a lot more clinical and assessment based, and it's not at all. Well, especially in terms of the framework that I was really drawn to, it's much more based on people and experience and relationship and humanness, which is probably, when I look back in hindsight and even just as I'm talking about it now, one of the biggest differences in expectations versus reality is how I work with clients.
Yeah, that's such beautiful insight and quite common. I think a lot of people will share that expectation with you, and that I think the way that uni and any undergraduate program in psych sets you up, it is very clinically led. Hey guys, sorry to interrupt this episode. We just want to quickly let you know all about our brand new anxiety e-course called Coming Home, How to Care for Your Anxiety. In this 6-week self-paced course, we will help you to deepen your understanding of your anxiety and teach you practical ways to help you feel more calm, confident, and connected. If you've ever felt unsure about how to look after your anxiety and want to learn helpful and practical skills that actually work, then this course will be for you.
From our years of clinical work and research, we found those who understood their anxiety and learnt to care for it rather than saw it as an enemy to get rid of, noticed a reduction in their anxiety and felt more empowered to manage their stress and anxiety in everyday life. We are so passionate and dedicated to assisting you build a strong foundation to look after your experiences of anxiety. If you'd like more information, pop over to our website on www.atthesitecollaborative.com.au. There's a free download of the introduction and what to expect, where you can feel free to suss out the course. We will add all this information in our show notes. Now back to the episode.
You know, it is much more clinically focused on presentation, assessment, intervention, all of those things. And I think it's ironic, isn't it? Because I think you might go into it wanting and seeking and craving the humanness. And then you might learn, oh my gosh, there's so much more to it. All these different frameworks I need to learn. And it can often ironically take away from some of the humanness. And I think when you go through that journey of, whether it be a master's or whatever it is, it creates, and I wonder if you felt like this idea of it can only be clinical, I'm only competent if I engage in all of these different interventions, if I do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I know we get this a lot, Ames, but Amy and I have created a practice that, we do have a lot of clinical work, but at the same time, we're very much focused on the whole person. We are very much human focused, which sometimes is quite in conflict with perhaps what we have learned or about what our studies have said is important. And I think that that's a really fantastic insight of, what you learn at uni, especially is very, very clinically influenced, may not always be, what framework you're drawn to, how you practice as a clinician outside of studies. And I think that that's such a great, great insight, Ames.
Well, thank you. Absolutely. The next part of this question is what aspects of our job at the moment that we really enjoy versus some that aren't so favorable. So Kat, if you think about, and I think we could probably talk a lot about all of the aspects of our job that we enjoy, because I feel confident speaking for both of us on this one, that this is so much more than just a job for Kat and I. Like, I think for Kat and I, the Psych Collaborative, everything that we do in terms of our work as clinicians is such a passion project that we really pour so much of ourselves professionally and personally because of what we really value and what really gives us a lot of joy and fulfillment and satisfaction. So this might actually be quite a difficult question for us to answer because it's hard to list just a few things down with what encompasses so much of what we are passionate about and what we really work hard on day in, day out because we love it so much. But if you had to, I guess, think about a few things that you really enjoy about this work, what would you say, Kat?
it is absolutely more than just a job for us. Parts of what I enjoy is, and I think I've always really felt like this, and I know that you do too, it is connection. I think holding space for people is such a privilege. It is like an indescribable feeling to make space for someone who perhaps has never shared something like that with anyone else, or who feels quite nervous to share something, and to be able to create safety for someone, for me, and then I wonder for you as well. It is one of the highest honors of this role to make someone feel safe, to have their basic needs of safety met when maybe they haven't had a lot of safety in their life. It is such a privilege. And I think it is so cool that we get to do that every day. And I think that sometimes I'm really re-reminded of how important that is, of how special it is to be able to do that. And people really, really need that and respond to that. So I think that that's probably my favorite part of the role, is being able to be there for someone and to make them feel safe. For me, that is when I know that this is the job, that this is the role, this is where I want to be. That's so, so important to me. One of my favorite parts of the role. I would say other things that I enjoy, and I think it's difficult here because you and I own a business, and it's hard to kind of separate being a psych and a business owner. But I think being able to have a lot more flexibility, we have both worked in separate organizations prior to this and have their pros and have their cons. But I would say in our role, Amy and I have so much more flexibility with times that we work, days that we work, clients that we see. And I think that that's so important in a role like ours, to have choice, to have freedom, to have flexibility, you know. And for me, I really, really appreciate that. And I think that's really important part of the role. I'm not speaking to every psychologist. Everyone has got very different formats. But I think, and I know we've spoken about the same, this was really important for the both of us to have some of that independence as well. That is something that I really, really love. And also just working with you, I think, as I said, this is very specific to the psych collab, but I think showing up to work, having a business with your most dearest friend, and to be able to, yeah, have so many different relationships with that one person is so special, and to be able to share that with someone else who just gets it. I think I've really learned how important it is to have, obviously, a best friend, but I think a partner in business who just is very similar. We share really similar values. I think we've created something so special and so beautiful, and I am so proud of us. So they're the things that I think are so just at the core of why I love this job and this role and this vocation. What about you? Talk to me about the things that you enjoy about your role.
Firstly, my little heart at that reflection, Kat. I just think those words were so warm, and I completely agree with what you were saying in the beginning around what you love about this vocation, how we work with people. I think that is such a privilege and a special experience to create a safe holding space for people that may have not had that experience before. And again, I agree that I think you and I share something really special together that we have worked really, really hard on, but that has allowed us to create a space for each other in terms of our roles as clinicians, as business owners. I think that is something really rare, and obviously that we're very conscious of and intentional in how we create that for each other, but allowing each of us to be heard and making sure that the things that are important to each of us are a part of this space in which we work together. I really love that about our roles as well. Like I said, I completely echo your experience working with people, and that being something that is just so unique to being a therapist. I think the other part of this role that I love so much, and an aspect that I get a lot of fulfillment and pride from, if that doesn't sound strange to say, I guess it can be difficult to talk about it feeling good to help others, because I think the very nature of a therapeutic role or the role as a therapist is that it's not about us. So sometimes it can feel strange to say that it feels good to be in a helping role, but I also want to acknowledge that I think being part of a helping profession, or at least for myself, is I was drawn to being a clinician because I feel valued based on how I can help others, and creating a supportive, safe, helping space is something that I do genuinely enjoy. So another aspect that I really love is creating a space for clients to deepen their understanding of self. I think what I hear often when working with clients is that they feel really stuck with parts of themselves that they essentially find difficult to be with or that they don't like. And something that fills me with so much passion and joy is being able to walk with clients through that process of understanding the function of that part of themselves that they may not have been able to accept or change or fix and may have even hated about themselves. I think that there is something so privileged about being able to share that space where that thing that clients are really stuck on or have been battling with themselves for a while around, or just something that they have felt so helpless around, actually becomes understood. You know, they have that real aha moment of understanding that perhaps at one point in time, you know, throughout childhood or throughout distress, difficulty, this part of me that I have been at war with has actually developed out of adaptation, necessity, protection, and it can be looked after. It can be something that is cared for, and that blockage tends to dissolve. And there is a real opportunity for transformation and change and growth for people to live much more authentic, fulfilled lives, because that part of them that they were battling with now has a space of peace and acceptance. And I think that that is just really, really wonderful to be able to witness people go through that process of self-acceptance and healing and making peace with themselves. As cliche as that might sound, I think it is something that I do feel very privileged that I get to hold space around and walk with people through that process. What would you say are aspects that are less favorable?
I think, like any role, there will be parts that maybe are more challenging. For me, I think a big one, and this was probably more prominent when I first started, and I wonder if you feel the same, Ames, was that sense of fear. I think fear and imposter syndrome, fear around not wanting to do the wrong thing, wanting to make sure you're really looking after your clients, you're using the correct intervention, you're doing the appropriate screeners, you're not missing anything, you're crossing your T's, dotting your I's. And I think with the training and I know governing bodies, there is sometimes it's driven by a lot of fear. Do the right thing. Better to be safe than sorry. Be really mindful of risk. You know, those really strict ethical guidelines, which are so important, and then they absolutely need to be there. But it creates, I've noticed with talking to colleagues and hearing experiences of other people, so much fear of doing the wrong thing that it often takes away your own trust in self. You know, sometimes it really takes away that natural want to help and care for, because you're thinking, I just don't want to get this wrong. You know, there's formulas to things and processes to things. And I think that fear can really interrupt that natural humanness of therapy that you and I have both probably found our way back to. But it takes time, and I really found there was so much fear, and sometimes still, you know, sometimes I'll be writing a report or, you know, doing a Medicare or, you know, just assessing risk and thinking, oh my gosh, am I doing the right thing? Have I missed something? You know, that is so common and so normal no matter what stage you are of your career. So fear was absolutely a big one. And yeah, imposter syndrome, that absolutely pops up, like I said, at any stage of career. I know I sometimes do struggle with that. I think we went into private practice at an early stage of our career, and I think it has its pros and has its cons. I think we've done a brilliant thing, and I think we're both very, very competent, but it still can show up. You know, I think that, oh my gosh, am I doing the right thing? Have I missed something? I really feel like a psychologist. I really feel like I'm not a psychologist, even if I've been in it for this amount of time. So that is something that absolutely I still grapple with frequently. Another thing that I do sometimes struggle with is really being mindful of burnout. I feel like you and I are really good at keeping check on each other, but burnout is so common in our industry and it can happen quite quickly if you're not really careful. And then I think add being kind of a business owner on top of that and all the wonderful things that we do that burnout. I'm lucky to have never been at that like total extreme stage, but I think in this role, I think in most roles, right, it is something to be really mindful of. But I know in this role, that kind of compassion fatigue, that burnout can come on quite quickly. And I think just being really aware of that is so needed in a job like this. So I would say those things, just the parts of the role that have been a little bit more tough than probably I'd anticipated. What about you, Ames? What do you find are the parts of the role that are probably less favorable?
Well, firstly, I think that is such a beautiful summary of some of the things that can be quite tricky to work with in this profession. Compassion fatigue, burnout, imposter syndrome. I think those are all real experiences that myself and a lot of other clinicians, colleagues absolutely relate to. And I think that it is so important to have those gentle reminders to look after ourselves and gentle reminders to be compassionate towards ourselves as well. I think as clinicians, we spend a lot of time holding space for our beautiful clients. And of course, we get a lot from that, but also it's making sure that there is a balance in holding space for ourselves as well, and really being able to recognize when we need to start taking a little bit more care and, you know, be essentially practicing what we preach in terms of our own self-care and looking after ourselves. I think absolutely. And that can be so much easier said than done. I think whenever we say that to clients, we really mean it because we feel it too. And I think that brings me to something that might come up as a bit of a difficulty, is that we are human too. And I know that probably sounds very obvious and strange as a, something that is, I guess, less favorable. And I know that's something that Kat and I have spoken about before. And I remember saying this to you, Kat, and you being like, oh my goodness, yes, that is so true. One thing that I definitely found maybe more so earlier on in my career, there is no in-between. You go from being a student to an expert. So sometimes it can feel like there is this expectation for you to know everything, for you to be able to respond to everything. And this doesn't always feel like the case, but I think oftentimes what can feel quite daunting or scary, or maybe that there might be a bit of internal pressure in this role or this profession, is that I'm looked at like I am this expert that is the knower of all. And I think the way that you and I work, Kat, we probably experience this a lot less now, but absolutely when I first started out as a therapist, I had this daunting sense of, okay, I've just come out of my studies, and yes, I studied really hard for a long time and I have this knowledge, but also the, I guess, expectation that I'm an expert, that felt very tricky at times. I think it is having this allowance for yourself that sometimes it's okay if you're not sure, because it is that very much I'm human too. And I think that can be really tricky for a lot of psychologists and therapists to sit with, is that discomfort of feeling like am I going to be able to help you the best way that I can possibly help you? Am I going to be able to give you everything that I need to give you? Because I think our basic premise is help, don't harm. Okay, so there's always that sense of, oh my goodness, if I don't know, or if I'm doubting myself, am I not going to do a good enough job at supporting you and holding space for you? And I think that can be really tricky to sit with sometimes. And I think what I have really learned is that when you are in the field of psychology, you actually never stop being a student. You never stop learning. There is no such thing as knowing it all. And that might sound a little bit scary, but I actually feel like that is a really kind of relieving way of looking at it, as there is always an opportunity to learn more. I'm always evolving. I'm always educating myself and learning myself in different areas of how to work with different people. And that's additive, but it definitely did take me a little while to get to that place of having this okayness around it's okay to keep learning. It's okay to not know everything and not be the expert in everything. There are going to be things that I can't answer, and that doesn't say anything bad or wrong about me as a clinician. It is part of psychology. Psychology is so broad, and there are so many different frameworks, and there are so many different theories of how to work with different presentations. And I think that can be really overwhelming at times. And I think it is not about, you know, like, okay, well, I need to learn everything there is to learn about this and every possible skill and intervention that I can know. It is really coming back to, well, what is aligned with how I want to work with people, the therapist that I want to be, and the clients that I am seeing. And like you were mentioning, Kat, having this development of trusting my own professional judgment, and that keeps getting stronger and stronger. Although I find that absolutely that can be that can be an unfavorable side of this role at times.
Yes, so well said, Ames. Student to expert, there is no in between. 0 to 100 real quick. And I think as well compounded by, you know, that when you're hired as, you know, a psychologist or as a therapist, it's that people just then suddenly expect that now you finish your training, you should know everything. And that kind of adds on to, oh my goodness, I don't know. What if I don't know this? What does this say about me? Is this just confirming my original imposter syndrome anyway? And you're right, like that feeling is so normal and often does not go away. And we never stop learning, you know, and I think actually the more that I wonder if you feel like this, but the more that we progress through our career, the more we learn, the less we actually realize we know. It's like this really overwhelming but really empowering thought of it's okay to not know everything. How can we? You know, there's always new research and new studies coming out that are disproving or changing the way that we think about things. And it, you know, don't have to be across it. I think the importance is, yeah, that this holding space and being human and that stuff can get lost sometimes along the way with what we were speaking about before. So such beautiful insight, Ames, so common and so human, all of these things. So we hope if you're listening and you experience these things too, please know you are absolutely not alone in your role as a therapist. And I think it goes beyond mental health or psych. I think in any kind of helper role, I think all of these things would probably feel really, would really resonate as well. Any last things to add, Ames, to the role, to your role, to the expectation of reality? Anything to add?
Absolutely. I think just one last little nugget. If you are a new therapist or not even a new therapist, I think just as a healthy reminder, because we are in helping professions and we give a lot of our energy and our time to helping others, that it's also okay if you need to reach out for support, whether that be for your own self-care, mental health, or even just support in the likes of supervision. I think having a supervisor or a colleague, someone that you can have as a safe, reliable, consistent person to lean on is really just invaluable. And I think so, so important that throughout your career, you know, even if you are a very experienced therapist, there are always going to be cases or clients that we work with that may touch on something within us because we are human. And really important that we as clinicians have our own support systems in place to keep us well, to lean on when we maybe are feeling a little bit of that overwhelm or burnout, or just someone to talk to about the complexities of stories that we hear or of things that we hold. You know, absolutely, it comes back to that having the same compassion for ourselves as we do for our clients and for people that we are holding space for. Again, additive. So I think if in doubt, if you are a young therapist or a therapist at any stage in your career and you're thinking, you know, I may need support around something, or it might be time for me to reach out to a supervisor or to a colleague just to get extra assistance, don't wait. Reach out. I know Kat and I, we have spoken about this a lot, that it felt so strange studying psychology, you know, this idea of helping others and connection and understanding the importance of positive, unconditional regard, the university felt really competitive and it felt isolating at times. And it was like real almost dog eat dog. Everyone was just competing with everyone and who had the highest marks and who was getting into what and, you know, where were you in terms of your GPA and all of those types of things, which felt really disconnecting and really, really isolating and not great. And I think sometimes that can trickle into how we feel with other psychs or colleagues, you know, that we're maybe not in competition with each other, but like we can't go to each other for support because there is some kind of competitive edge or just, you know, sense of like, in order for me to appear competent or capable or enough, then I shouldn't need to go to you because maybe that says that I don't know what I'm doing. And I think that we can all work on this as a community, therapists, allied health clinicians, making sure that our colleagues and people around us feel safe enough to come to us when they are unsure, you know, even if it is just that you have a question or if you are really struggling, that it's always okay to ask for support. It's always okay to ask for help. And that doesn't say anything about you as a clinician and not being capable. I think that is something that I hear often coming up as a challenge. If I need help, does that say something about me not knowing enough or not being good enough? And absolutely not. I think really important to access support when you need it as a clinician.
Yes, so well said. That competitive, elitist, not safe space that can absolutely trickle through even past uni. Yeah, it creates such a daunting environment. So absolutely reach out. It is so important. You are not going to be the expert of everything, and that is okay. Probably have a very unique approach to clients. Sometimes it doesn't matter what interventions you're doing, how good you are at something. You are so different and so unique in your own way. And that in itself is an intervention. and that's important. I think you can get stuck in this need to learn more and do more. And I think it's fantastic to always be growing. But I think that can be almost a safety behavior, right? Do more, learn more. I just need to know more about this and I need to be better at that and blah, 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 blah. And I think actually it's about what's happening for me internally that's making me feel the need to do that. Am I not feeling competent? Am I not feeling confident? Yeah, and I think that that can be a trap. I wonder if you've seen, and I know I've certainly felt sometimes, maybe I need to do this and do more and be better and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, while that's important, I think just be really mindful if you're someone who does get stuck in that trap of new courses and new self-development and new professional development and I need to be doing more. Actually, it's not about doing those things. It's about something's happening for you internally that might be driven by some kind of core belief of not enoughness or not good enoughness. And that's actually really important to explore.
Well, I think that might be all we have time for today. We hope we answered that question well enough for you all and really, really hope that for anyone that might be feeling a little bit uneasy or unsure around stepping into psychology or for any young therapists out there that might be struggling with a couple of the topics that we have discussed today, that at the very, very least, you feel like you are much less alone in the experience. I think that's always our goal, isn't it, Kat, to allow for a little bit less of that feeling of like, oh my gosh, am I the only one that feels like this? Or is this a problem to do with me? No, you are human. This is part of the experience. This is part of the role at times. And yeah, just so important that if you are someone that is currently feeling like that, that you do feel like you have your own support network to lean on and to reach out to, and that you are looking after yourself just as you would anybody else that you were helping or caring about. Thank you so much for your beautiful, wise words today, Kat. It's always such a pleasure and a privilege to share this space with you. All of the spaces that we share together, our business, our podcast, our friendship. Yeah, very, very grateful for you.
Our sleepovers. your lounge room tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait. Well, thank you so much as well, Ames. I really hope that whoever's listening may have got something out of this. We, as always, will be back in your ears in another 2 weeks. We will be chatting next episode all things
problem solving.
We'll be chatting with Maddie. Look forward to it. We will see you guys in a few weeks' time. Please stay warm. Please get on top of your life admin. Please remember your bin days, and we will be back soon.
Bye.
Hey guys, just adding a disclosure, this episode is not intended to replace personalized psychological advice and it is always intended to be general in nature. This episode does not take into account your own individual experiences. We always recommend you seek personalized professional psychological support.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you want to support the show, it would mean the world to us if you could leave a review. This also helps us sneak our way into more ears.
If you'd like to follow us or learn more, please follow us at The Psychology Sisters or at The Psych Collaborative on Instagram. If you'd like more info on our private practice, please visit www.thepsychcollaborative.com. All of this info will be in our show notes. We will see you next time, guys.
Bye.